And we're holding on page 8 in Yevamos, Ois Yud Beis. We started learning last time about dinim of gerus. So now we had gotten into that by way of it talked about what happens if a goy or an eved has relations with a bas yisrael. What's the status of the child? There was a whole discussion about that. So that led naturally enough into the dinim of gerus in general. So the Gemara says Tanan Rabbanan. Ger shebolis gayer bizman hazeh. If a ger comes to be this gayer nowadays, you have the famous explanation why in general we say the lashon ger shenis gayer rather than goy shenis gayer. So there's the famous idea. I think the Chida says because all along he had a Jewish neshama, he just didn't know it. So therefore now he's a ger who's actually coming to actualize it. Anyway, so he comes to become a ger nowadays. And we learned before that in times when things are good for the Jewish people, we're not necessarily going to accept gerim anyway. But so here we're talking about nowadays when it's not so easy to live among the goyim. So we ask him. With that said, there are rishonim who don't have the words bizman hazeh in their girsa. Anytime a goy comes, you ask him. Mara isa shabosalis gayer. What made you decide to come and then present yourself as a candidate for gerus? E after yedea, don't you realize she's throw bizman that the Jewish people nowadays dvuyim are in pain, dchufim pushed around, schufim turned upside down. Now she says the word schufim is a word in Aramaic, so he translates it lowly and turned upside down. The word schufim literally means like something that's bent over and turned over, umaturafim and tossed around, the yisurim boin aleihem, and troubles come on the Jewish people. In other words, we tell the guy Parshat, it's not so easy to be a yid nowadays. What are you doing? By the way, there is an interesting point about that. What about when it comes to talking to a born yid like that? So Moshe talking to a born Jew like that and telling him, you know, it's hard to be a Jew. Rav Moshe Feinstein has an expression. He says, you know, Jewish parents in the early part of the, in the early 1900s would have, you know, there was the famous Yiddish expression, Ois Shveretz Zayna Yid. It's hard to be a Jew. And unfortunately, he says the children picked up on that and they said, well, if it's so hard, then why should we bother? So we won't live as Jews. And so to tell that to a Jew, especially to one's own children, is not right. But here we're talking about to a prospective ger. Then we tell him, what do you think you're doing? Im Omar, if he says Yedeani, yes, I know all that, the Eni Kedai, and I'm not really worthy to be joining in that kind of thing. In other words, he's saying Halo Rashi teaches out. He's saying Halavai, if only I were to be Zoicha to be able to join in what the Jewish people are going through. Mekablan osa, then that shows, in other words, that he's sincere about it. Mekablan osa miyad, then we immediately accept him, meaning not he becomes a ger on the spot, but in other words, we accept him as a candidate for gerus and we start the process. Now there's a long braisa over here that the Gemara there's a long braisa that goes through all the dinim of gerus, and then after quoting the whole braisa, the Gemara goes through it piece by piece and explains it. Here in Ein Yaakov it's out of order because here after bringing certain pieces of it, that he brings the relevant Gemara discussion about it. So the braisa says, "My dear noisin mitzas mitzvis kalis or mitzas mitzvis chamuris." We inform him from the beginning about some of the lighter mitzvahs and some of the heavier mitzvahs. Now, there's a few different explanations what we mean by lighter and heavier in this regard. We can mean the ones that have minor punishments or no punishments at all, and the ones that have severe punishments, like kares or misas beisdin or whatever. It could mean, the Me'iri gives an explanation, it means, for example, kalos would be the little minutiae, the little details that a yid does on a day-to-day basis. Let's say, for example, an example of kalos in that regard would be, we know there's a din how a yid is supposed to put on and tie his shoes. So you tell them that, as well as you tell them the chamuris, the big ones like Shabbos and Kashrus and whatnot, because the idea is if he's not really so sincere, he's going to think to himself, tying shoes, that's something that a religion is going to tell you how to do. Who needs that kind of religion? And then you see that he's not really that sincere about it in the first place. And on the other hand, he might say, well, that's no problem. I can learn how to tie my shoes differently. But you know what? To have to give up my favorite goyish of foods, I can't do that. So one way or the other, in other words, it'll help. So between the kalos and the chamuris, it'll help weed out the less sincere ones. Anyway, my timer. So the reason why is that the iporish nifrish, because this way, if he wants to withdraw, then let him withdraw and fine, you know, he'll keep shev mitzvahs b'nei noach, and that's good enough. He's not required to become a ger after all. So we want to make sure that he's really sincere. So we want to mention various mitzvahs that might put him off. And why do we want to do that? Why are we not so over eager to have gerim? Gerim are difficult for the Jewish people, like a sapachas. A sapachas is a type of tzaras. So you have se'es, sapachas, and beheres are the major types of tzaras. What does that mean? How can we say such a thing about gerim? We'll explain in a second. Rashi and Tosfos have several explanations about it. But first, let's learn the drasha. Dichtiv, as the pasuk says, V'nilva ha-ger aleihem, the ger will join up with the Jewish people, v'nisbechu al beis Yaakov, and they will nisbechu to the house of Yaakov. So the word nisbechu is related to the word sapachas, so therefore it's hinting at the idea, as much as on the one hand we appreciate gerim, but we should realize that there is a downside to having them, and they're like a sapachas. In what way are they like a sapachas? Rashi says, because they still tend to stick to some of their original ways. It's hard for a person to completely give up his old ways and his own mentality and so forth. So Jews are going to learn from him, or a Jew might end up relying on him in matters of Issa v'Heter and not realize that the ger is not familiar with all the ins and outs of it, because he still has some of his old habits.
That's one of the main tests of a Baal Tshuva.
So that's one of the main tests of Baal Tshuva as well. Yeah. Tosfos brings in a couple of other things. First of all, Tosfos says, similar to what Rashi is saying, they're not always knowledgeable in the details of mitzvahs. Tosfos brings that Rashi in a different Gemara mentions another reason, is because it's not just a matter another Yid might rely on him and matters of Issa v'Heter, it's also a matter of Kol Yisrael, Arevim Zeh LaZeh. All Jews are responsible for one another, so therefore, if the Ger ends up doing something wrong, then the born Jews are held responsible for it too. Tosfos doesn't like that answer because from a different Gemara, it's clear that Arevus doesn't necessarily pertain to Gerim. So then Tosfos gives it a couple of other reasons. Another reason is because the Gemara mentions in Kiddushin that the Shechina rests only on Mishpachos Miuchoses Yisrael, the families among the Jewish people that are of good lineage. And a Ger is not included in that. A Ger is not considered part of the main kohol of the Jewish people, as the Gemara discusses there in Kiddushin. So therefore, when Gerim join up with the Jewish people, it means that you have fewer Miuchosim, because eventually the Gerim and their descendants intermarry into the Jewish people, and therefore, so you have less Yichos, and therefore you have less of the Shechina resting by the Jewish people. Another reason Tosfos says is because we Jews, we have a mitzvah after all. The Torah warns in many places to be careful with the feelings of a ger, not to hurt him verbally, not to wrong him financially, etc. And it's very difficult to, sometimes a person may inadvertently hurt a ger's feelings or do something to him, and then we're held more responsible than if it was to a regular yid. So those are all a number of reasons that Tosfos says. Then actually, Tosfos in Kiddushin, also where this Gemara is brought, this concept is brought in Kiddushin as well, the Tosfos brings over there something from Rav Avraham HaGer. So one of the Baal HaTosfos, who himself was a ger. Imagine, by the way, you know, you think of the time and place where Tosfos was composed in the 12th and 13th centuries in France and Germany, where if you were a born Yid, you could be in tremendous danger all the time from the goyim. How much more so if you're a goy and you became a ger, where if they found you, you'd be burnt at the stake. Imagine the gumption that this Rabbi Avraham had to become a ger. Anyway, he gives an explanation there in Tosfos that actually puts a spin on it in favor of gerim. He says many times you find that gerim are over careful in details of mitzvahs, so therefore it makes the born Jews look bad. Why aren't you as punctilious and as careful with those details of mitzvahs as the gerim are?
They're trying to compensate.
It can be partly because they haven't learned thoroughly, and therefore they figure they have to be machdo because we don't know whether we can.
We have a special.
It can be because they compensate. Yeah, it could be for a variety. Yeah, whatever the case. The point is, for a variety of reasons. Yeah. Reb Levick, by the way, the Rebbe's father, makes an interesting point in this regard. First of all, you have the expression over here, Beis Yaakov, specifically. Why are the Jewish people called Beis Yaakov in this connection? And he says, because we find Avraham and Yitzchak worked on bringing Gerim in, especially Avraham, you know, we have in last week's parasha, Ves HaNefesh Asher Osa B'charon, whereas Yaakov, yes, he made Gerim as well, but his primary focus was his family, Mitos Shleima. So therefore, from Yaakov's point of view, like the Gerim belong less among the Jewish people than from Avraham and Yitzchak's point of view. But then he says also, as far as the V'nispachu, the point is, he says like this, there are four basic types of tzaras. You have Se'es and Baheres, or the two main types, and each of them has a subtype called Sapachas. In the same way, you have among the imahos of the Jewish people, you have Rachel and Leah, who are the primary imahos, and each one of them has a secondary one, Bilhah and Zilpah, respectively. So therefore, the point of this comparison with the nisbahu, says Reb Levick, is that when we say that that gerim are difficult for the Jewish people for any of these six or seven reasons that we mentioned, it means not only you could say like the more important Shvatim, the ones who come from Rachel and Leah, but even so to speak, the less important ones, the ones who come only so to speak from the Sapachas, only from Bilhah and Zilpah, even they, Gerim, are difficult for them for all the reasons that we mentioned. Anyway, the point is that therefore we try to dissuade a potential Ger from becoming a Ger. Well, if he still wants to go through with it, besides we said that we tell him some of the lighter mitzvahs and some of the heavier mitzvahs, however we define that, the Braisa also says, we inform him of the issur of taking leket shikha, that he as a landowner is also to take, and he has to leave for the poor people, leket shikha and peya and maisa oni, all those things that he has to leave for the poor. My timer, why do we mention davka those? Because Ben Noyach neherag apochus mishava pruta. A Ben Noyach can be executed. We know that you have Shev Mitzvahs Ben Noyach, and one of them is not to steal. A Ben Noyach can be executed for even stealing less than a Shava pruta. And by him, there's no mitzvah of returning it. By Yisrael, who steals, we say that he just has to return it. By a Goy, there's no such thing. By a Ben Noyach, there's no such thing. He's over on the mitzvah, on the Issur of stealing, and he's Chayav Misa. So what does this mean? What does that have to do with Leket Shitcha and Peya and Maisa Oni? So Rashi gives two explanations. One is, this goy now, till now he was a goy, now he's going to become a ger. Let's say he owns a field. He's going to now that he became a Jew, he's going to see that Jews are coming and collecting from his field. They're collecting the stalks of grain that he dropped, which is leket, and the ones that he forgot there, which is shitcha, and so forth. And he's not going to realize, if he hasn't been taught by the Beis Din, that these are actual things that they're entitled to. He's going to think, like you have these guys who stand over there by the edge of their field with a shotgun, you know, and they're, you know, anybody trespasses, then boom. So therefore, we want to inform him ahead. Now, the point is also that Bnei Noach don't need Hasra. So now, for example, when it comes to Gezel, a Ben Noach can be executed for stealing even less than a Shava Pruta, as opposed to by a Jew, we'd say he'd be Moichel. So the point is, therefore, in other words, that once he's over on one of the Sheva Mitzvahs, he can be sentenced to death. So therefore, we need to inform him ahead of time, be aware there are going to be Jews collecting Leket and Shikha and so forth in your field. Don't think that you should go out there with your gun or your sword or whatever and start, That's one explanation. Then Rashi says a more preferable explanation is, because we see that goyim are makbid on even less than a shava pruta. That's why we're saying that by them there's the concept of gezel even when it's less than a shava pruta. So now we're concerned that he after all, he still has his former mentality. He's going to think, wait a second, what are they doing taking my stalks of grain? He's not going to think to himself, okay, well, the stalk is worth less than a pruta. I can't be bothered. He's going to think, wait a second, that's mine, and I'm going to take steps to prevent him from taking it, and we have to inform him that no, it's not so. The fact is that now you're a yid, and you have to develop a different mentality.
Now that's less than a nickel. I don't think they could buy anything for less than nickel nowadays.
Yes, that's the point. But so Rashi prefers that explanation because, of course, just the first reason why I have to tell him the din of leket shikha and peya. Just inform him that Jews are going to be collecting in his field, and that's that. So that's what Rashi's preferred explanation is, because in other words, we're saying that goyim can be stingy about even less than a shava pruta. So now we need to tell him, in other words, look, you need to start developing a Jewish mentality that less than a shava pruta doesn't matter, and that you should be moichel on it. In fact, by the way, they used to have in Yiddish slang, they would call a miser. They would call a Ben Noyach based on this kind of Gemara. If we're saying that a Ben Noyach is particular about even less than a Shava Pruta, so when you had a miser who wouldn't even give a Pruta or less than a Pruta to a poor person, so they would nickname him Ben Noyach.
Must have loved that one.
Yeah. Anyway, Marsha gives another reason as well. Marsha says, because again, why mention Davka these? He's also going to have to give Truma. He's also going to have to give Meiser and so forth. Why focus Davka on Leket Shikha and Peya and so forth? And the reason is, Marsha says a third reason, besides for Rashi's two reasons. Primarily, Matnas Aniyim, all of these things, Leket and Shikha and so forth, primarily apply when the Jewish people live in Eretz Yisrael, and we know a ger does not get a hereditary portion in Eretz Yisrael. So therefore, you have a mitzvah, the ger is able to collect from those things as well, because he needs that to support himself. So now what's going to happen is that nowadays, after the Jewish people are in Golos and we're not primarily living in Eretz Yisrael, he may think these dinim, these mitzvahs don't apply anymore. So we need to tell him that, no, you should know they still are applicable nowadays in Eretz Yisrael, and you're expected to give them. Because they're applicable in Eretz Yisrael. When he becomes a ger, if he owns land in Eretz Yisrael, then he has to leave like a shechen payer from his fields. Yeah. Okay. Onward. We also inform about the punishments for various kinds of mitzvahs. For example, Omrim Loi, we tell him, Heva Yadea, you should know. And by the way, actually, there's one of the Masechta Ketanis called Masechta Geirim. If you look in the back of the last volume of Nezikin in a standard Shas, it's usually the volume that has Avodah Zarah, Ovis, Hodius, whatever. Anyway, you'll find over there a bunch of Masechta Ketanis that when they were composed, it's not so certain. Some of them may have been composed in the time of the Gemara. Some of them were composed in the times of the Rabban and Sevaroi. Anyway, one of them is called Masechta Geirim. It has more details of the dinim of Geirus, and it mentions over there, if it's a prospective giyores, a woman, we don't tell her so much about lekat shichan peah, because not necessarily is she going to own a field and need to know about this anyway. Instead, we teach her about the mitzvahs of Jewish women, chala nida and adlokas aner. Anyway. So, Oimrim Loi, so we also tell him, Heavy a day, you should know, Sha'ad Shalei Bosel Midazu, before you come to this Midah, meaning before you become a Jew, Achalta Chelev, if you eat Chelev, no problem. Iyata Onosh Chorus, you're not getting Chorus for it. You're a Goy, and a Goy is allowed to eat Chelev. Chilalta Shabbos, if you break Shabbos, Iyata Onosh Skila, then you're not getting Skila, because again, a Goy doesn't have the mitzvah of Shabbos. Achshav, but now we tell him you should be aware what you're getting yourself into when you become a Jew. So we inform him of the severe punishments for various categories of mitzvahs. And again, that might put him off it. That might make him say, you know what? I can't give up my chelev. I can't give up my my Saturday afternoon, whatever I do. And then therefore, you know, so we tell him geig gezunt hayt and just keep shavim mitzvahs minenach. Now, just as much as we have to inform about the punishment for various mitzvahs, we also tell him about the reward for mitzvahs. We tell him, Omrim Loi, Heavy Yadea, Shah Olam Abba, Eni Ose Elo Tzadikim. The Olam Abba is made for the Tzadikim. The Jewish people nowadays, you're wondering why it is that Jews have such a hard time in the world. The reason is because the Jewish people can't get too much good or too much punishment in this world, because either one is going to take them away from Yiddishkeit, as we have, for example, by too much good, by Yishman, Yishuran, by Yivar. So we tell them, look, fundamentally, a Yid's job is his ultimate purpose is to have a place in Olam Abba, and therefore the Eibishter arranges things in this world appropriately so that he shouldn't lose his Olam Abba because of too much good or because of too much of the opposite. So we tell him, in other words, that sometimes it can happen that a person can get a schar in this world and in the next world, but it's not that common. So as opposed to the Rosha receives most of his good in this world, and then he doesn't get an Olam Abba. So we tell the Ger, that's the story with the Jewish people. And that's also, it's calculated also. Now on the one, Bach points out, you know, you have to strike a balance over here. On the one hand, you want to dissuade him if he's not sincere. On the other hand, you don't want to dissuade him if he really is sincere. So like this, we have to strike a balance between telling him about the challenges involved in Yiddishkeit versus also the rewards. We tell him about the Rambam goes into a little more detail in it when he discusses these dinim in Hilchos Yisurei Biyah, that we explain to him about the greatness of the Jewish people and about how Hashem has Olam Haba reserved for us and that kind of thing. In Marbin Olav, we don't go into too much with him to try to scare him out of it. The in medactic in Olav, and we don't go and into so much again into say like every little detail, like every tiny thing that might go wrong. Because again, you know, if the guy is sincere, we don't want to put him off it completely. And also the point is the in Marbin Olav in medactic in Olav means there comes a point when we realize that he's sincere, and then we stop trying to talk him out of it. Amar Rabbi Elazar, Maikra, where's a pasuk that we see that? Dichtiv, we have with the story of Rus. After Nomi tells her about certain basics of mitzvahs, as the Gemara is going to quote in the next couple of lines. The pasuk says, "Vatera ki misam etzes ki misam netzes he v'lachas ita." She saw that Ruth is very steadfast, very strongly wanting to go with her. Vatechta l'daber eleha, and she stopped speaking to her. Meaning, Naomi realized after the whole conversation that they had that Ruth really is sincere and she really wants to go through with it. So at that point, Naomi stops trying to talk her out of it. So we see that point that there comes a point that the beis din, whoever it is, in this case, Naomi herself is not a beis din, of course, but she's the closest one to Ruth at that point. So therefore, she's filling that role that the beis din would normally fill to, on the one hand, make Ruth realize what she's getting herself into, and on the other hand, to not go too far with it. So what kinds of things was she telling her? Omrullah. So now you have like this. So what do you have in the psukim over there? So Naomi is leaving Moav to come back to Eretz Yisrael. The two daughters-in-law, Ruth and Orpah, are coming along with her. Naomi starts convincing them, "What do you think? Do you have a future with me? I don't have any children for you to marry. Even hypothetically, I would have children. It would take many years until they grow up. V'chola. So you might as well return. You might as well return back home and resume your lives over there." So eventually, the pasuk says, "Orpah kissed Naomi and left." But Ruth Dovka Ban, Ruth stayed together with Naomi. The Gemara mentions in Sota that night Orpah went and fell and sank down to the lowest levels of Znus. Eventually she became the mother of Goliath and various other enemies of the Jewish people who were all eventually killed by David and his people, the descendants of Ruth. Anyway, so Ruth stayed together with Naomi. So then the psukim say that Naomi says to Ruth, why don't you follow your sister-in-law? And Ruth says, no. She says, don't be pleading with me. I'll tifki be. Don't plead with me to leave you. Ki el asher teuchi elech, wherever you go, I will go. Of asher talini olin, wherever you stay overnight, I will stay overnight. Amech ami, your people are my people. Velekayech elekoi, your God is my God. And she continues in the next pasuk. Asher tamusi omus, wherever you die, I'm going to die. Veshomer cover, and that's where I'm going to be buried. And she continues. In the pasuk, she says, no matter what, no matter how much Hashem does to me, the only thing that could possibly separate us is death. So then at that point, the pasuk says, Naomi, stop talking to her. Stop trying to dissuade her. So what does that mean? When Ruth is saying, wherever you go, I will go. Wherever you sleep, I will sleep, etc. The Gemara is understanding that each of those statements of Ruth's is in response to something that Naomi had told her. So namely, Omrullah, so Naomi started by telling her, Osu lon Tchum Shabbos. You should know, for us Jews, it's also to go beyond the Tchum Shabbos. So Ruth says, not a problem. Basher teuchi elech. Wherever you go, I will go. If the Yid is also to go in a certain place on Shabbos, I won't go there either. Naomi tells her, Osu lon Yichud. You should know also a Yid is also to have Yichud with the opposite gender. At that point, by the way, this is the Gemara tells us in Sanhedrin that in the times of David HaMelech, they made the Gzeira against Yichud Pnuya, that an unmarried girl should be in Yichud together with a man because you have the whole story with Amnon and Tamar over there. This is a few generations before that, of course, because Ruth is David's great-grandmother. At that point, though, already Yichud of a Arayas is also. So a Yichud of an Eshes Ish with any other man other than her husband, or yichud of close relatives, except for parents and children, and to a certain extent brothers and sisters. So Naomi is telling her, we have that din. So Ruth says, fine, basher tolini olin, wherever you consider is a kosher place for a yid to sleep, and you would sleep there, I will sleep only there. Naomi tells her, mafkedin and tayag mitzvahs. You should know, we Jews have 613 mitzvahs. You, as a goita, have only 7. In fact, there's a medrash that says that's why she's called Rus, because the name Rus is gematria 606, representing the extra 606 mitzvahs that now she got when she became a Jew. Anyway, so Rus says, fine, amech ami, your people are my people. Whatever your people are chayev in mitzvahs, then I'm part of that people as well. In fact, Iyun Yaakov points out, how does Amech Ami refer to the 613 mitzvahs? Because we know not every mitzvah is applicable to every individual yid. After all, she as a woman, there's going to be some mitzvahs that she can't do. There are mitzvahs that are only for Koyanim, mitzvahs that are only for the king, etc. She's saying, how do we fulfill the Tayag mitzvahs collectively, the Jewish, across the Jewish people? So she's saying, fine, I'm going to be part of that collective Jewish people, and between all of us, we'll fulfill all 613 mitzvahs. Naomi tells her, "Osu lon avodah zara." You should know that That Avodah Zarah is also for us. So these are examples also, Maharal Shah points out, these are examples we said before that you have to tell a prospective ger, miktsas mitzvahs kalos and miktsas mitzvahs chamuris. You have to tell him some of the lighter mitzvahs and some of the heavier ones. So here, for example, she's telling her about Tchum Shabbos, which is the most that there would be a punishment for it. Even there's different opinions whether the basic concept of Tchum is daraisa or whether the whole thing is darabanan. Even if we say it's daraisa, the maximum is malchus. As opposed to, for example, Avodah Zarah is misa. Now, to be sure, Maharsha says, look, I mean, Goyim Achayev are also to worship Avodah Zarah as well. So what does she need to tell her that? There's no Chiddush in that. So Maharsha says, well, one thing is, you know, we know the Gemara tells us that if a Yid unnecessarily leaves Eretz Yisrael and goes to Chutz La'aretz, Goyim Kamisha Ein Lo'elaka, it's almost as if he doesn't have Hashem anymore. We had in last week's parasha in Rashi, Rashi made mention that point. So yeah, so therefore, so she's telling him, look, you're a Bas Malachim, you're descended from the kings of Moab. At some point, you might want to visit your hometown in Moab, and that would be tantamount to renouncing Hashem in favor of Avodah Zarah. So she's not literally telling her Avodah Zarah per se, but she's telling her something like that, which would be for a Yid on a bedakos sticker form of Avodah Zarah. A couple of other mafarshim point out other possibilities as well. Another point is, for example, you're not allowed to have any Avodah Zarah in your possession either. That's something, as a Ben Noach, you're allowed to have a statue, for example, in your possession. You're just not allowed to worship it. So now she's telling her, you should know, you're not going to be able to have that either. A related idea to that is, for example, that you have the din that if a Jew owns an Avodah Zarah, the value of it is also b'hanah. Now, we said before, Ben Noach, ne'er gal pachos mishava pruta, that a Ben Noach tends to be very stingy with his money. So therefore, so she has to single out to her. You should realize, for us Jews, it's not just that worshipping Avodah Zarah is out of the picture, but even, for example, if you happen to, at some point, get something of Avodah Zarah into your possession, you're going to have to renounce it and destroy it, and you can't have anything to do with it. And that's something. Are you willing to accept that, given that you have the mentality that every pruta or less than a pruta is precious? And then she says, fine, velekaya chalekoy, your God is my God, meaning with all the details that are involved with Avodah Zarah.
The Rebbe said, if you bring a TV into your house, it's like bringing the.
That's also like there's that too. Yeah. I suppose if TVs had existed in those days, then yeah, Nomi might well have told Rus not to have. Yeah.
Very similar.
Onward. Nomi tells her, Dalad Mrs. Nimsur LeBeistin. You should know that Beistin has four different ways that they execute people. So you should realize, in other words, that there are going to be averus where potentially you might be chayav Mrs. Beistin for it. Ruth says, fine, Basher Tamusi Omos. Wherever you die, I'm willing to die as well. Then she says, you should know, Beis Kvorim Nimsru LeBeis Din. Not only that, but even after a person is executed by Beis Din, they don't get buried together with their family. They get buried at first. The Gemara and Mishnah tells us in Sanhedrin, they had two different cemeteries. One for the people who got Skila or Srefa, which are the harsher kinds of Mrs. Beis Din, and those were reserved for the worse Averis. For the more terrible averus, and then another one for the people who got hereg and chenek, which are considered like the less severe averus, because you don't bury a rosha next to a tzaddik, and you don't bury even a bigger rosha next to a lesser rosha. So she tells you should realize it would even if you were to be executed by Beis Din for doing an avera, you wouldn't even be buried in a place where you would be expected to with your family. You would be buried in one of these places together with the rishoyim. One second. So she says, fine, v'shomer kaver, fine. If I have to be buried in such a place, then that's where I'll be buried. Iyun Yaakov points out an interesting thing in that connection. He says like this. Now, the Mishnah goes on to say over there that they would bury the people who were executed by Beis Din in one of these two cemeteries was not a permanent thing. It was a temporary thing until eventually when the flesh decayed and all there is left is bones, then they would dig him up and then they would rebury the bones in where his family is buried. Bechlal, the minhag in the times of the Mishnah and the Gemara, we often find, we have the concept of likur tatsomis, for example, that there was this way of doing things. They would bury people in a temporary area and then eventually they would, once it was reduced to bones, they would collect the bones. It's called likur tatsomis, and they would bury them together with their family. They would put the bones inside a stone box or something and bury it in their family plot. They found all over Eretz Yisrael, they found examples of these stone boxes that contain bones like that. Now Ion Yaakov points out, now that would apply to a regular Yid, because he has family after all. Rus being a Giyotis, her family, her Goyish family, is back in Moab, and she's not even related to them la'alocha anymore. If she were to get executed by Beis Din, there's nobody to eventually dig up her bones and rebury it with the family. She's going to stay there forever. She says, fine, b'shama cover. If it has to be that I'm buried there permanently, then not until Tchias HaMesid, that's how it's going to be. So now that Naomi had told her all these things, the callus and the chamuris and all of that, and Ruth had accepted on herself, miyad, so right away, as the pasuk continues, that Naomi saw that Ruth is very steadfast and very determined to go with her, so she stopped trying to talk her out of it. A few other interesting things in this regard, by the way. First of all, Maharsha says, we were talking about how does Amech Ami come to refer to the 613 mitzvahs. So again, you had what the Iyun Yaakov said about 613 mitzvahs collectively across the Jewish people. But the Maharsha actually brings an interesting point from the Sefer Shoresh Yishai, which is a pirush on Megillas Rus that was written by Reb Shloimeh Alkabetz. Famously, Reb Shloimeh is best known for having written L'chododi, but he was a great mekubal in his times. He was a chaver of the Arizal, and he wrote a pirush, including lots of ideas of Kabbalah on Megillas Rus called Shoresh Yishai. So he says over there, we know that the letter is an aleph, we know that the letter is mansapach. Usually we think of them, they just have the regular gematria as the other form. A shloss mem is 40, same as a regular mem. A langa chof is 20, same as a regular chof, etc. But we know there's also a system where those five represent the hundreds from 500 to 900. Langa chof for 500, shloss mem for 600, and so forth. Well, using that system, then the word ameich, ayin mem chof, the langa chof, comes out to 610. Then there are three letters in the word. There's your 613. So by saying the word amech like that, she's hinting at that I'm willing to accept on myself all 613 mitzvahs. There's also a vort on it that says why does the pasuk use the expression ki misametzes he? Like misametzes means that she's very determined, but it also suggests that she's having to strengthen herself. Like she doesn't have the koyach to go, and she's having to like pull herself together to go. Misametz, like I have to put in all the effort. And the vort is, we know, similar to the way we have the story of Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish, where Rabbi Yochanan convinces Rish Lakish to do tshuva and start learning Torah again, and then Rish Lakish lost a certain amount of his strength and he couldn't jump back across the river. The same way over here. When Rus had genuinely accepted on herself that she's going to become a Jew, she lost a little bit of her physical strength. So she has to like really pull her strength together in order to be able to continue walking. And when Naomi sees that, then she realizes, oh, you know what? Now we know that her acceptance of Yiddishkeit was sincere. Precisely that point that now she lost some of that gashmias to kakoyach of hers.
The whole story of Reish Lakish shows the power of a beautiful woman over a man.
The whole story of what?
Power of a beautiful woman over a man. That's what convinced him to do it.
I don't think it says specifically that Rus was beautiful, but could be. There is, by the way, the interesting question in all of that. When exactly did Rus become a Giyodas anyhow? And there's a huge machlokas about it that goes all the way back to Midrashim and the Zohar, and it's discussed by Rishonim and Achronim. The problem with it is that either way, there seems to be a difficulty with it. Because if Rus was Nisgayer before she married Machlon and Orpah before she married Kilian, then how on earth is Naomi telling her, you know what, go back to your houses in Moav and go back to your gods and whatnot. Since how are you able to tell a person who became a Ger, go back to your old Goyish lifestyle? And on the other hand, if they weren't Nisgayer by that point, and that explains why Naomi is trying to talk Rus out of it at this point. First of all, the Pasuk doesn't mention that she had a Geirus when she came to Beis Lechem. Fine, you could say, okay, the Pasuk doesn't always say those details. But you have afterwards, the whole discussion was that who's going to marry Rus as part of the process of being, you have to redeem the fields that Elimelech and Machlon and Kilian had sold and keep them within the family. And you have to bring Nachas Ruach to the Neshama of the Mess by doing Yibum with his wife. If Rus was a Goiter when she was married to Machlon, then they're not married Lahalocha anyhow. So how is it going to do anything for his neshama by Boaz marrying her? So there is quite a lot of discussion. The Zohar brings up the point, the Midrashim bring up the point about the pros and cons. What do we say? Was she in fact Nisgayer before that or not? So I came up with an idea years back, how much it's Oiskehalten, I don't know, but we know there's a concept that a child can be Nisgayer, and then by their adoptive parents, can or their natural parents, if the parents are Nisgayer as well, can convert the child, Gerkot, Madbilonois, Aldas, Beistin, and then when the child reaches the age, 12 for a girl, 13 for a boy, then you ask them, do they want to stick with it or not? They have the option of being Moicha, and if they do, then they're Ois Yid, and if not, then they remain a Yid. There's a medrash that says that when Rus married Boaz, she was 40. There's also 40. There's also a medrash that says that Rus, well, there's also a medrash that it says, or at least implies, that Rus was an Ailonis, which is an Ailonis is a woman. We mentioned it briefly earlier in our Masechta. The Gemara deals with it in more detail later in the Masechta. I don't think it's going to be here in Ein Yaakov, but a woman who has certain physical characteristics that her body has not fully matured. And Ruth was like that. It was Bederach Nes that the Eibishter made that she's able to become pregnant and have a child, Oved, who eventually is David's grandfather. And the vote is, now you can have a case, the Rambam describes a case based on the Gemara, that you have a woman where she doesn't actually develop the official Simone Ailonis. There are certain Simonim that show that she's an Ailonis. For example, a deep voice and various other things about the shape of her body and whatever, that where then once she develops those Simonim, then we say, fine, she's considered a mature, she's considered an adult in Halacha, and she's considered an Ailonis. Then you can have where she doesn't develop that, but she also doesn't develop the normal Simonim of a woman, Shtei Cyrus, and the rest of that, and then you can have a case where she's considered a katana until she's 35 years old. So hypothetically, we could say that Ruth was, when we say 40, we don't mean exactly 40, we mean sometime in her late 30s, by the time she married Boaz. So the vort would be, in other words, when she was married to Machlon back in Moab, they had been Megayer her as a child. Now that she's becoming lahalocha, an adult at age 35 or thereabouts, so Naomi is asking her, look, do you want to stay a Jewish woman as you have until now, or do you want to revert back to being a goyish woman? Because after all, your geirus was the geirus of a child, and you have that option. And so Orpah made one choice, and Ruth made the other choice.
She was living with her parents, her
parents were the king. What does that have to do with anything? That doesn't matter. The point is she's married by the Pasuk says that they were, that Elimelech and his family were living in Moab for 10 years before finally Naomi decided, after Elimelech and Machlon and Kilion have died, to return to Eretz Yisrael. So sometime during those 10 years they were married. So therefore you could say that by the time she was married, she could have been sometime in her 20s or whatever, and all that time she doesn't have Simone Ailonis, but she also doesn't have the normal Simonim of Nairos. Now that she's reaching the age, so yeah. Her parents are Goyim, of course. They're the king and queen of Moab. So, no, because it doesn't have to be. If she married into Elimelech's family, the idea would be that Elimelech and his family are taking charge of her, and they're going to be Megayer her Aldas based in. So they would put together an ad hoc based in there and in Moab, and be Megayer her, but with the understanding that she has the ability when she's of age to renounce it. Yeah. So whether that is the answer to it, I don't know, but it's an answer that I came up with. Maybe it has merit.
These options.
So that's the thing. So when the child becomes when the girl becomes a naira, or a boy becomes a nar by mitzvah, that's when they have the option. Well, la halacha. Not necessarily, no. No, think of it. I mean, the cotton may not be able to understand these things. No, it's when they're bar bas mitzvah that we give them that option. Okay. The Gemara goes on. So now, after it talks about these dinim of geirus, then the Gemara also digresses a little bit to talk about some of the dinim of yifas toyar. We know, after all, the yifas toyar in some ways is like a geirus, with the exception that she is brought into it not willingly, like a regular geir, but rather she was captured in battle. There is, by the way, a fascinating Ur HaChayim HaKadosh on the beginning of Parashas Ki Tseitzeh that discusses how does that come about? If the Lo Dibra Torah Ela Keneged Yetzer Hara, the Gemara tells us that Hashem only gives this mitzvah because, you know, a Yid is not going to be able to control himself otherwise. I mean, since when? What, do you have other mitzvahs like that? A Yid can't control himself from eating chazer, so you're going to allow him to eat chazer? Why do we have an exception like this? And the Ur HaChayim HaKadosh explains, and the gist of it is, usually you have, again, a ger is somebody who is born with a Jewish neshama, and eventually he discovers that, and eventually he actually becomes a ger. Meanwhile, you can have a person who they were born with a Jewish neshama, but they don't have the ability on their own to come and become a ger on their own, or a geirus on their own. But their neshama may be connected to a yid's neshama, have a certain ruchnistic connection to a yid's neshama, where that yid has the ability to schlep that other neshama out of the golos that it's in and bring it to become a ger. So therefore, when this yid sees this b'yifas toyar among the captives, and he's attracted to her, it's not Sami's attracted to her because she's beautiful or because he has a yetzahara or whatever. Deep down, it's because his neshama has a connection with hers, and he's going to be the one to schlep her out. The Ur HaChayim HaKadosh compares it actually to, you have the story of Shechem and Dinah, where there was something good in Shechem's neshama that Dinah was able to schlep out of him, and that's why she had to go through that experience. And then once she took out whatever good there was in him, then the rest of him can be destroyed by Shimon and Levi. So you have such concepts. Anyway, so the Gemara says, Tana Rabbanan, v'osa siponeha. When the Pasuk says about the Yifas Toya, that she has to v'osa her nails. So what does that mean? Rabbi Eliezer ema tokut. So Rabbi Eliezer says means she has to cut her nails. Now, you could argue cutting her, the whole point of everything that she's supposed to go through is to make her look unattractive. So the Jewish soldier is going to say, you know what, why did I bother with her? Let me just send her away. So cutting her nails is not going to make her unattractive. Nevertheless, Rabbi Eliezer learns, says Rashi, that it's exer sakosiv that she should cut her nails. Rabbi Akiva im etigadol. Rabbi Akiva says, on the contrary, it means you should let them grow long, and that'll be something unattractive. There is, by the way, and in various places in Chassidus, there's various sichos of the Rabbeim that talk about that this avoid of osa siponeha applies to every yid individually. You have nails which can be used to scratch to poke the other person, and you have to be careful of osa. You have to cut them and make it that you're talking to another yid, and you're telling them what needs to be done and what needs to be stayed away from is not in a way with siponayim, with nails that are going to scratch them. It's brought nayim yom as well.
He's
actually the first time. But nevertheless, day by day, he sees her sitting there crying and unattractive, or whatever. The initial impression may wear off. Yeah. Okay. Tonana banana voxa savia ves ima. When the pasuk says she'll cry for her father or her mother, Rabbi Eliezer ima avia mamish ima mamish. Rabbi Eliezer says that's exactly what it means. She's going to cry for her parents. She may never see them again. Rabbi Akiva Omer, Avia ve'ima zu avodes kachov mazolus. Rabbi Akiva says it means that she's crying for the getchkes that she's never going to be able to worship again. V'chein hu Omer, Omerim la'etz aviata v'gomer. As we find, a posik where the Navi criticizes the Jewish people, you're calling a piece of wood my father, and you're calling a piece of stone my mother. So therefore, so we see that the goyim would think of their getchkes as father and mother, so we're saying she's crying for that as well. What's the nafkamina? Tosfos points out there can be a few nafkaminas. First of all, what if her parents are dead? According to Rabbi Eliezer, there's no reason she should be crying for them. They're dead anyhow. According to Rabbi Akiva, she's still crying for her getchkes. Another point would be, what if her parents were nisgayer? And another point then the Tosfos brings is, Rabbi Akiva would hold, she first has to be willing to give up Avodah Zarah before he can even have relations with her. Until then, as long as she's crying for her getchkes that she misses, then you can't say v'acha ken tovei aleho v'alta, that then you could have relations with her and make her your wife. Whereas according to Rabbi Eliezer, it wouldn't matter because she's not crying for that anyhow. Eventually, she has to be maskim to the geirus, and otherwise, if she's not willing to, then he has to send her for you. I forgot to mention, actually, by the way, the Sifse Chachamim points out on the pasuk in Rus. He says, why Davka did Nami pick these particular mitzvahs to illustrate to Rus what's involved in being a yid? I mean, okay, she has to tell her kalos for chamuris, but why Davka these kalos and these chamuris? He says like this: Nami is telling her, look, you're going to become a geirus. Isn't it going to happen occasionally that you're going to want to visit your family in Moav? And then you should realize if you do that, you're not going to be able to come back here on Shabbos because it's Chum Shabbos. So Rus tells her, fine. Nomi tells her, okay, but you should realize also you might go on the trip and you can't make it there all the way in time for Shabbos. You're going to have to end up spending Shabbos in a field or something. You're going to have to be careful about Yichud. And she says, fine. She continues to her. She says, we have 613 mitzvahs. We're not allowed to worship Avodah Zarah, which means, again, it can mean, in other words, if you go to your family and you visit them, it may happen that you end up getting schlepped into some of their ways, including some of their Avodah Zarah, even if not worshiping it outright, at least having something to do with it. So the Nurus tells her, fine, I'll consider that completely off limits. Then Nomi tells you should know something else. Realize if you keep on visiting there, eventually people may suspect that you're involved in Avodah Zarah, and Beis Din may use that as enough evidence that you could actually be executed by Beis Din. Because even if you don't have Eidim Vasra, still there are cases where Beis Din can kill somebody Shaloi Min Adin, but just in order to make a gedder. So Ruth tells her, fine, you know what, even if that happens, I'm not going to complain, I'm not going to nothing, even though I know I'm innocent. Basher Tamusi almost, I'm willing to that. And even if it means that I'm going to be buried among the Rishoyim, and I know perfectly well that I'm not shy of that, nevertheless, I'm willing to accept all that. So that's so that would be why Nomi picked those, and those are the answers that Ruth gave.
Very serious.
Yeah. Okay. Yom Yom Mashiach Ugo'ola. What is today? Tes Cheshvan. By the Chanukah Beis Hamikdash Hashlishi, which is Mikdash Avnei Koinenu Yodecha, it's going to be established by Hashem's own hands. Then we're going to have the true Inyan is going to be revealed. Whereas the Pasuk says that Hashem says, wherever I allow my name to be mentioned, I will come to you and then give you a bracha, as it says at the end of Aseres Hadibros, that will be in the entire world. Like this, up until then, Bechol Mokim means in every individual place that Hashem chose. First the Mishkan and the Midbar, and then Gilgal, and then Shiloh, and so forth. Now it's going to be literally Bechol Mokim, meaning that the perfect of the Beis Hamikdash, the fact that the Kohanim have reshus to mention the Shem HaMefodesh when they duchen, that will permeate the entire world. By Yom Yiyan, Hashem Echad, Shema Echad, meaning that the entire world, Hashem's name will be said as it's written, because the whole world will be a dir lo yisvarech, like the Mishkan and like the Beis Hamikdash. Miyad mamish. As far as halachas, so the next simon here in Kitzur Shulchan Aruch deals with halachas involving animals on Shabbos. So I don't know how much detail we'll go into that, because we use animals a lot less than they did then. One basic point is, though, that you can't have your animal do malacha for you on Shabbos. And that includes, for example, for it to be carrying something on Shabbos. So therefore, you have various rules about what an animal can and can't wear outside on Shabbos. But a practical matter of that to start with is, let's say, for example, you have something that needs to be transported from point A to point B. If you have, for example, a pet dog or what have you, you can't put it on the end. You can't tie it, let's say, to the animal's collar and have it transported that way, because that would be mechamer acha behemtoy, and that's also an issur of Shabbos.
What? Nowadays have dogs in the neighborhood. Something about the leash has to be...
So the leash, we'll talk about details with leashes later on in the session.